Oh yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
More like it.
Good evening and welcome to Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. It's all about train wrecks, so pretty much all three stories tonight are going to be the story of my life. Train wrecks! No. This is Dale Kay from Spook Show here, along with
Dave Binkley from Weird Ness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, with new episodes coming out with each. And we're here along with, it's just us, as our good buddy is down for the count one more time.
Yeah.
Get better.
Everybody, extend your positive vibes into the direction of our main man, Gar the Ghoul, from Horrible Horror,
right.
Starring, Gar the Ghoul. We love the guy, so we want you to get well, dude.
Yep, please return to sender. I mean, return to us. Return to sender. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Return to Babylon. I don't know. Return to the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh.
Return to the topic. Train wrecks. Yes. And we've got David.
Need to get there sometime.
Yeah, we'll get there. Roundabout way, but we'll get there. We're taking the long train to train wreck stories from High Adventure, Crisis, another description of my life, and Suspense. Yep.
Yes, and interesting stories. Suspense is a little Twilight Zone-ish. I don't want to give any more away, but it's a little Twilight Zone-ish, it feels like.
Ooh,
so,
all right.
There we go.
That's good.
Yep, and you got the good old Bob and Fogs Bane in the chat, waiting for the arrival of the good old 640. Which, when it rolls in here with the first adventure of the train shows we have.
Yeah. Speaking of adventure, we could probably start off over there. Not quite yet. We've got some fun stuff to talk about. Dave, I don't know. As far as a real passenger train, I don't think I've ever ridden on one that I recall. You know, smaller versions at like theme parks and stuff, but you can't technically call that a train.
I've taken one. And
now, was that a ghost tour?
We were on a ghost train, but that was just along the Cuyahoga Valley Recreational District. On my honeymoon, we took Amtrak down to Florida.
Ooh. Oh, no kidding.
And it was for a honeymoon. It was a horrific experience.
Can't be as bad
for
as mine. The in-laws went.
you judge here. We had to be up there, up in Cleveland. They catch in Cleveland. They go east-west through Cleveland. Okay,
right.
So we had to be up there by 1 in the morning. Well, so we got there. This was the day of our wedding. We got there before 1 to find out the train had stuck somewhere between Chicago and Cleveland, had broken down. They didn't get there till like 2:40 in the morning.
Oy.
And then when we got on, I mean, we were exhausted. That's a long day.
Yeah.
Well, we snuckered down, but the heater wasn't working. Now, this was December 4th, nighttime. And so we got there, and the train took us to D.C. We changed trains to go the north-south and took it down to Jacksonville. So we were just so tired, we pretty much slept through. Now, we didn't have I forget what they call the rooms that are, you know, sleeping rooms.
Sleeping rooms.
Sleeping cars. Yeah, maybe. Anyway.
Sleeping cars.
We didn't have a compartment, so we sat in the chair for the whole ride. And then on the way back, we said, okay, we're going to be smart about this. We're going to buy this $30 Amtrak blanket, two of them, because if it's not, still not working on the way back, we won't get frozen out. Going north, they couldn't turn the heater off from Florida up to D.C.
Oh, no.
And
terrible.
People were literally, by morning, people were literally throwing up from the heat.
Oh, gosh.
And then we got east and west. At least the train was working a little bit better that way. So you decide which one was better, Dale.
I don't know. I can't answer that. Heavens.
Oh, my.
Mm-mm-mm.
Here's the thing about what happened here. Go away. It's an ad that came up. Okay. Actually, Dale, for 40 years, crashing trains was one of America's favorite pastimes. From 1896 until 1930, showmen would travel the country staging wrecks at state fairs.
You mean life-size train wrecks?
Yes. I'm going to give you just a couple of stories, then we can give another one later on. On September 15th, 1896, two locomotives crashed head-on 14 miles north of Waco, Texas. Locomotive boilers exploded on impact, sending debris flying through air for hundreds of yards, killing at least two spectators and maintaining countless others. One man even lost an eye to a flying bolt. But no one ran from the calamity. In fact, after the crash, thousands of bystanders ran toward the destroyed locomotives, hoping to claim a piece of the wreckage. That's because the 40,000 people or so scattered among the tracks that September day knew the locomotives were going to crash and had paid to be there. From 1896 to 1930, stage train wrecks were popular, albeit destructive, event at fairs, festivals across the U.S., long before anyone ever thought of wrecking an old automobile's demolition derby or monster truck rally. One of the first stage train wrecks was done in 1895 by a railroad equipment salesman named A.L. Streeter in Ohio. The wreck used the same formula that nearly all other stage train wrecks would follow for the next 40 years. Organizers would lay a stretch of track, usually anywhere between 1,800 feet and a mile long, and then get two old steam locomotives, put them at either end of the track facing each other. They would then hire two brave locomotive engineers to wait for the signal from the organizer. When they got that go-ahead, the engineers would pull the throttle back as far as they could, get the locomotives up to speed. They would then jump from the locomotive before the two trains crashed in front of a crowd who had paid a few dollars to see the spectacle. According to historian James Reisdorf's book, The Man Who Wrecked 146 Locomotives, Streeter's wreck was so successful that there were at least six stage train collisions the following year, including the most infamous one north of Waco, Texas, known as the Crash at Crush. And you know what? We will talk about the Crash at Crush between two of our programs. How's that?
There we go.
Teaser.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Gosh, and I thought the Gomez Adams was cool.
Yeah. And I don't know. You know what? There was even a ragtime composer who had a piano out there when it was, and he composed a song about the train wreck. He named it after that train wreck, and he composed it and sold the song sheet music of it, as well as, I'm sure, a piano roll.
That's amazing. That is so cool. Oh, man. See, it was like Smash Up Derby for a long time ago.
Yeah.
Gotta love that. Demolition Train Derby. See, Fogsbane knows exactly what I mean. He just said it more eloquently, quite frankly. and this is kind of high adventure, so why not start there with a tale called Fireflies and Gunfire?
Yeah, I don't know why it was called that, but anyway, that's what they called it. And it is from June 28th of 1960 and 9.
Ooh. That wasn't that long ago. We were alive.
We were.
Barely!
Tonight's story by Norman Partington is entitled Tea Kettle Number 4630.
To the scrap iron department. Get yourself a real locomotive, eh?
Oh, a real engine, you say? Is that what you call that mobile fuse box of yours with its metal coat hanging on top? Hey, what kind of pleasure do you get driving that thing? Flicking over switches and all that. The thing doesn't even sound like an engine.
It does the job darn efficiently, though, Coopers. It'll not be long now before the whole country's electrified. Then you can retire that tea kettle of yours and stop polluting the air.
Ah, Frank, they'll never retire old 4630. There isn't a gradient in South Africa that this brute couldn't pull a freight train up. Listen, man, once I've got steam up, I could take it from here to Cairo.
With or without a railway line, eh, Coogan?
Ah, man, Frank Parsons, take your little spinning dynamo away and let a real engine get on with its work, man.
See you later, Coogan. I guess he's right, Mr. Faree. These old steam engines are just about finished. And they never let us take any trains on any decent journeys. Just something about the marshalling yard. That's all we ever do.
Hey, hey. Stop your moaning. You'll get your chance someday when they give you your engine. And then you can make your own choice. As for me, oh, man, I'll stick with the old tea kettle number 4630 until I retire. Now, listen, young man. Take the oil can and give those driving shafts a bit of juice. Hey, and put your coat on unless you want to get soaked in the rain.
Rain, I'm sick of it. It's been going on like this for 7 days. Here, did you hear the radio news about the Tugela River? It's nearing its record height. What about them bridges that cross it?
Oh, nothing for you to worry about, Harry. The line superintendent keeps a pretty close check on them. You blow the whistle quickly enough if he's worried. Now push off with that oil can.
How'd you like to take a ride with us in the cab, eh, Superintendent? At least more comfortable in an electric loco than old Corpus Faree in his old tea kettle.
Yeah, I can say that again, Frank. Even so, I spent many years on the footplate of engines like old 4630. But I know you can get attached to steam engines like you can never feel about electric ones.
Yeah, but they're more efficient.
I agree. Cleaner and more efficient in every way. There's a kind of soul in a steam engine that... Easy with that throttle, Frank.
Yeah?
So much darn rain about, you'd hardly see the lights.
Yeah, we're well under the permitted speed for this stretch, Superintendent.
Slower still, Frank. We're only a couple of miles off that big bridge across the Tugela.
What was the last report, Super?
No danger to the bridge, but the water level has gone past its highest recorded mark.
Uh-huh.
And that means thousands of tons more water pressing against the supports. That breakdown, Superintendent, I thought I'd better check it myself. Might have to stop traffic over it if this continues.
Oh, come off it, Super. I've taken trains over that bridge when the whole river's been so in flood that it looked as if we were crossing the Pacific.
Slower still, Frank. You've got a weight behind you, plus 1,000 passengers. I remember 20 years ago taking a freight train across. Frank!
Yeah?
Slam on your brakes! Into reverse!
Right.
A bridge! Use the sandbox!
It's stopping. Holding. Heavens, hey. Super! We're at an angle!
Get out of the cab and uncouple that engine from the coaches. This thing's likely to slide onto the bridge. Can't you see where the bridge is buckled slightly? The whole thing will go if it gets the added weight of the engine. And it'll take the whole train with it. Open the door.
Right. Oh, the couplings have jammed at the angle of the engine and a sudden stop. Merciful heavens! The bridge is breaking up at the other side.
Stay with the couplings. Use a sledgehammer and see if you can part them. There's a line telephone by the signal. I'm going to get help.
But how can you? The power line's down.
There are other engines besides electric ones, Frank. Now you stay there. Hello? Hello? Why the blazes? Hello? What took you so long to answer? Breakdown, Super. The Tugela Bridge. Yes, the bridge, the main one. It's going. Halt all traffic both sides and get a breakdown train up here. An emergency. As fast as you can. Or use 4630. Get her covered up and tell Cormus Ferry to break every blasted record in getting here. We've got a train on the bridge approaches. The engine's on an incline and slipping. Well, hurry then, man. Get moving.
Breakdown train coupled, Harry?
Coupled, Mr. Ferry.
Climb aboard, Harry, and get shoveling coal. I want top pressure. Here we go. Three notches. Show him what a real engine can do.
Slipping. The bridge is starting to buckle. The line's done about 9 inches. Are all the passengers out?
Most of them, Frank. But the lot refused to get out because of the weather. The guards going through the train hammering those who won't get out. Like us, they see no reason why they should get out when the train looks so safe.
But if the bridge goes anymore and the line sinks down, even just a few more inches, the loco's going to slide forward and drag the whole train with it. Where the blazes is the breakdown train? We've just got to get those couplings loose.
Corvus Pari and our 4630's on their way.
What?
This is one time, Frank, you can be grateful we still have a few steam engines available. The whole power line's down and all the electric locos are stopped.
If Corvus gets here in time and saves this lot, I'll get down on my knees and pray out loud all night.
Headlong gauge is nearly in the red, Mr. Free. It won't take any more pressure.
Keep troubling, Harry. Maybe the old boilers aren't what they used to be, but they'll take that pressure.
Please, Mr. Free, the speed limit's 50 and we're doing 70.
Do you know, Harry, when the old tea kettle was new, it was actually tested at 85 in England before it was sent down here. Well, not that I've ever done that speed myself, and it's against regulations, you know.
But I think this is one time I shall find out if those manufacturers were telling the truth. Let's up two more notches, please. Just bent your back to that shovel.
Hope the breakdown gang of the trucks behind them going to ride.
It's train I have, Mr. Marie. Here, did you see the people in that station we just passed through? They could hardly believe their eyes at the speed we were going.
Oh, maybe they'll start thinking it's quicker to go to Johannesburg by train than by jet aircraft.
taken half the bridge with it on the other side. Did you get all the passengers out, Frank?
Honestly, I don't know, Super. As fast as the guard chases them out one side, they crawl underneath for shelter, or else climb back into the coaches from the other side. It seems daft to them to stay out in the rain and get soaked when there's apparently a good, healthy train standing empty next to them.
Well, it's not going to be there much longer if Cobus Farid doesn't get here quickly with their breakdown gang.
Yeah.
Frank! Oh. Come away! There's another section of that bridge going.
Blimey.
Just look at it. Must be 100 feet in length. And the river's just ripped it away. I'm going to have another look at the track under the lake. The track's tilted down 2 more inches these past 15 minutes. Darn those couplings!
Well, suppose Corbus does get here on time. Do you think he'll be able to pull the slot far enough back to safety, Super?
I doubt it. The locomotive tilted down on such an incline, he'll never be able to pull it against its dead weight.
Yeah.
And candidly, if we don't get those couplings smashed within this next half hour, the rest of the bridge will go. And so will the whole darn train.
Keep a lookout for the line ahead. This is a real bad area we're going to pass through now.
Why is that, Mr. Furry?
Because the whole land about here dips right down until it's almost a level of the river. Each time we have a bad rain, the river overflows and floods this part here. I remember once, many years ago, taking a train through when the track was under 12 inches of water. I can tell you, young man, my heart stopped beating for 15 minutes till I got through.
What? 12 inches? The miracle didn't get to the piston chambers and stop the engine.
No, I had a fair margin of safety and I felt it was worth the risk.
Oh, I should stand on the track, Harry, quickly. It's underwater, the whole track.
Hey, it's just like an inland sea. But we'll have to back up, Mr. Brew. We can't take it through that long.
Oh, shut up, Harry, let me think. Can you see the signal gantry?
Yeah.
Look where the water's there, up to the third cross member, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's about 2 feet 6 inches from the ground. Mm-hmm. 2 feet 6, our piston chamber's about 3 feet 6 inches to spare. I think we can do it, Harry. But we'll have to take it easy.
Mr. Free, you don't know the condition of the track underneath. How about if it's been washed away or the bed loosened? So if you put the weight of the engine on it, the whole train could slide sideways into the river. As it is, we can't even tell where the track's supposed to be and the river start. It's just a mass of water for nearly a mile.
Let me tell you something, Harry. When a call goes out for a breakdown train, it's an emergency.
When they teamed up with you at the depot, they all said you were a bit crazy. I'm convinced of it. But to take a train through 2.5 feet of flooded water, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of. Okay, Mr. Bree, I'll still shovel coal. I just hope the insurance pays our families well.
Superintendent. The couplings are so twisted at that angle, we'll have to cut through them with an oxyacetylene torch.
We're not going to have time, Frank, if that bridge section slips any lower. Now look, you people. Get out of here. Can't you see you're in danger? Keep clear of the train before the whole lot slides into the river.
Oh, where the blazes are the police to keep control.
Can't get through to us, I suppose. This is low-level ground and the whole area around here is flooded.
Now what about Corbus and his breakdown train?
I'm expecting no miracles. The river's probably burst its bank by now and flooded the track.
Yeah.
The only thing we can do is stand back and try to see no lives are lost when that bridge goes completely.
Oh, I don't know. Old Cobus is such a stubborn chap, he's quite likely to swim through and pull the train along with him.
Even the most stubborn chap in the world can't take a steam train through water 2 feet deep. And that's what I imagine it'll be by now.
And that's part one of High Adventure.
Yep, you can't trust them electric trains, man. Going to get in trouble. You need those old steamers. Steamers, yep.
Those were something else.
This gets does get very intense towards the end of it. So, the first time I heard it, put me on the end of my chair, and I was standing up.
Really?
Yeah.
It's building up to it. I'm standing on the train.
No standing on the train. No standing on the chair. That's what my wife told me that too. Get off the chair.
I've ridden many a buses. I have nothing against public transportation, and I don't count the rapid transit as a real train, although it's something of a passenger train. I've never been
parts of it are it is
on a train towed by a locomotive, you know.
Ah, yeah.
So I guess that's what I mean to differentiate.
Ah. Yeah, but you technically have been on a train.
Yeah.
Not that the Cleveland RTA is the most exciting train to be on, but
no.
I hear
scenery leaves much to be
desired. Really yeah, the trains in Canada and the Western trains are all really, really cool to be on. Although there's nothing to see here. You know,
yeah.
A crime scene. There's nothing to see here.
Yeah,
no,
nothing to see here. Yeah. No, that would be amazing out west because the scenery is just breathtaking on some of the trains that they have in Colorado and the Dakota.
Give me
the place.
Give me a plane. Give me a plane. I'll get there faster.
I'd rather drive. I'm a control freak.
Well, you know what? Actually, it probably
if there's
going to
be a fiery crash, I want it to be my fault.
Yeah, the old, I forget his name, but an old comedian, it was only on a train once. Planes are supposed to be safer than trains, and I was only, and they're right, I was only on a train once, and a plane hit it, you know? So
there you go. Wow. Now, that's some sorry luck right there.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
A balloon.
Yeah.
Hey, I had a balloon fly over my house just the other day. A hot air balloon. It was so low, you could hear them turning the gas tanks on and off to make it go up and down. Yeah, our county fair is this week. And our backyard practically abuts the property. So we hear loud music or loud tractors all night.
And when I lived in Norton, where my parents lived, constantly out in Wadsworth, they would have these balloon events. And sometimes, if the wind were wrong, they'd end up in our backyard, coming down in our backyard. So they'd have to drive around to pick them up, that kind of a thing. So that was neat. And of course, we have the ultimate balloon here in Akron. We have.
Yeah,
this is the home
blimp.
The home of the Goodyear blimp, and I tell you what, all week long I've been looking up in that sky because we haven't seen. Now my boys saw it; they grew up with it. They go, "Oh yeah, it's the blimp," and then you know. But for me, although I've lived here a long time now in the Akron area, still it's a thrill to see that blimp up there.
That's the kid that still lives in you, and I know that feeling. The Goodyear blimp was here this summer, maybe a month ago, flying fairly low, and it was really cool to see.
Yep. I even got to pilot a blimp for a short time, believe it or not.
You what?
I got to pilot a blimp.
You got to pilot a blimp? That's what I thought you said, and I did a double take.
Well, I did. We got a thing for several of us from the radio station, as long as I made a program about it, which we did. We went through and we did it called the Blimp Experience is what I called it. And we went through and described this. Bob Holland went through and described exactly what they were doing. They were refurbishing one gondola and had everybody give their experiences of it and things like that. Won a state award for it, but during the process, two things happened. One, we all got to take turns piloting the blimp. And two, I actually got airsick in the blimp. It was the motion, you know, and you look at the blimp, you don't see it, but, you know, the way Bob Holland was flying it, He was going up and down and up and down. You couldn't see it from the ground, but you could feel it. You could feel it. And my stomach felt it, and my stomach emptied. But I recovered in time to be able to fly the blimp myself, even for about 5 minutes. It was really cool. We had the head blimp pilot there with us. So I did a couple of programs on the blimp. One was when I think it was the USS Akron or whatever it was christened, and so we did a program on that. That's the one time they had three blimps flying in Akron at the same time. For the first time in like 40 years, something like that. So
that's a lot of airspace needed because they're not exactly the sleekest, or you can't really turn on a dime.
Yeah. And they don't really go that fast, but they do get up there, and because they can take, you know, as a crow flies, they can get to some places. It doesn't take long because they can go straight there and not have to worry about roadways and turns and things like that. Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But today's show is about trains, not blimps.
Indeed it is. So perhaps. did you want to do another tale, or shall we just jump into the conclusion?
No, we'll do that. We'll do that. Well, let's do the conclusion, then we'll do this one about one of the greatest train wrecks ever. And it was a paid event, by the way. A pay-per-view. You had to pay to go see it.
You had to pay to view it. That's right, in person. So here we go with the remainder of Fireflies and Gunfire from High Adventure.
Slow. Even slower, Mr. Paree. It's kicking up such a bow wave, it'll flood over the piston soon.
The line is level at this part, yeah. But there's just a slight gradient down about half a mile ahead, Harry.
How are you going to get through it? It'll be over the piston.
Can you handle the regulator, Harry? Just keep it at the walking pace.
Yeah, but what are you doing, Mr. Faree?
Walking on the line ahead. Then as soon as the line dips, I'm going to take it at speed.
The water'll be up to your thighs. If you're not careful, you get swept away, Mr. Faree.
Take over now, Harry. I'm getting down into the track.
Jam your brakes for the moment I hold my hand up.
Right.
Gee, but the water's cold. Right, Harry. Wait until I'm in front of the engine. Then up the regulator, one knot. Right? Hey, stop it now. The gradient's here. Whew. At least the rain stopped. All right, Harry, move over. Get that pressure as high as you can. The gradient's only 200 yards in length. I'm going to back up, then accelerate like the devil. We'll just burst our way through the water like a cruiser going into battle. Not that I've ever seen a cruiser going to battle. They don't have many of them in the Free State, you know. Right, into reverse. Good. Pressure right?
Pressure? The yard foreman could see that pressure gauge this minute. We'd both be out of it looking for a job.
Oh, in the red, is it?
Right in the red.
Then here goes. Hold on to your hat, Harry.
Pouring right over the boilers.
Don't get to get into the furnace. Taking all right.
Good old sea kettle. Go. I see it's shallowing. We're going to make it, Mr. Faree. The old sea kettle's doing it. Come on, 4630. Come on. A few yards more. Oh, dear old sea kettle, I love you.
We're out, hey, my boy. We're out. I told you the old girl had it in her. I'm the regulator, and as fast as devil can take us to the bridge.
Frank, check with the guard that he's put out the boxing.
Can't check. He's done it. He's a good man, knows his job. Though what train's going to explode them, I wouldn't know. Nothing can get through in this weather. How's the bridge holding, Super?
Just listen to it, creaking away. If I just put my weight on it, I'm sure the rest of it will go.
I just slipped at that marker. The locomotive's down another 2 inches. And it slips forward nearly 3 feet. It's not going to take it.
Yeah. Do you hear that, Super?
A fog signal detonated. Surely old Corbett
can't... It must be.
sign that the guard knows his job. In his end of the breakdown, he rushes back along the line and fixes these fine explosives on the track. That was the warning one. In a minute or two, we'll hear two consecutive bangs, and then we'll slam on the brakes. Any sign of the train yet?
No, not yet, Mr. Parry. Though with a night as black as this one, we could smack into it if it were only a dozen yards ahead.
Keep your eyes skinned, my boy. Only... There they are! Down, regulator! Out for the anchors, Harry boy!
I'll shake out the breakdown tube. I want oxyacetylene torches on the couplings. The loco is ready for going into the river and pulling the train with it. Corvus, when the men are out, back up your train half a mile, uncouple, then bring the tea kettle down here and couple onto the back of the train, okay?
Corvus, take it easy with that coupling. No jarring or you'll push the entire train into the river.
Jarring me? Man, I can couple onto that train as softly as a mother kissing her baby. Just watch it. Just watch it and see how a real railwayman does the job.
Slowly, Corbett. 12 more inches. Slowly. 6 inches. 3 inches. Easy now. Now lock your brakes and be ready to reverse if we get the signal.
Corvus, I've got a very light from out of one of the breakdown trucks. If I fire it, uncouple and back away, Don, quick, because that'll mean the train sliding into the river. I think we're going to be too late. Foreman tells me it'll take him nearly an hour to cut through those links.
Oh, the bridge isn't going to last that long. You can almost feel the line slipping down. On the river.
I'm just wondering.
What's
if I dare take the risk?
Risk? What have we got to lose? Except the whole train. What have you in mind, Super?
Those couplings.
Yeah?
We can't wait an hour to cut through them. We've got to get them unfastened within minutes.
Nothing can do it quicker than a torch, Super.
Except.
Except what?
Blast them. With dynamite.
Dynamite? You'll only have to cough near that bridge and the whole lot will go into the river.
We always have a supply of dynamite in the breakdown trucks for emergency. Tell the foreman, Frank, to bring me 3 sticks immediately.
Gee, I've heard of some mad thing.
Get to move on, Frank. 3 sticks and a fuse.
Right.
Corvus! Corvus Marie! Down here!
Okay, what's it now, Cooper? What's it now? I hope you're not going to ask me to drag the train and the loco back off the bridge. Because even the old tea kettle can't do that with a loco at that angle.
Not that, Corvus. I'm going to blast the couplings, free the train from the loco, and then you've got to drag the train back to safety before it follows the loco into the river. Can you do it, Corvus?
Ah, that even miracles, so long as they're only little miracles, are possible with old 4630.
Well, this is going to be a big miracle, Corvus. I'm setting dynamite on the couplings. I warn you with a shout. You'll have just 3 minutes before they detonate. Have steam up to maximum pressure. Put the loco into reverse. Take up a slight pressure, not too much. And the very second the dynamite blows, get that regulator up and back away with the whole train as quickly as possible.
Have you got that, Corvus?
Got it, Hooper.
And look here, Corvus, Marie. No heroics. The chances are that when the dynamite blows, so will the bridge. And if the couplings haven't been cut, then the train and the old tea kettle is likely to be dragged forward straight into the river. So you and your fireman be ready to jump if that happens. Okay, Corvus.
I have no fears about that. If old tea kettle starts to go for a swim, then we're going to part company pretty darn quick.
It's right there, Super. Then we should have a clean break.
Leave the explosives to me, Frank, and go and make sure everybody's out of the area.
Right, I'll do that.
Tell that guard to go through the train again. And if he finds anybody inside, to boot him out.
Right.
There's less than a 50-50 chance of pulling this off. Now, hurry it up, Frank.
Harry, for this little lark, I think you'd better clear out the camp. And
There'll be one less for me to worry about.
Oh, no, I'm staying, Mr. Farid. You can't look after the engine and stoke the furnace at the same time.
Don't be a crackpot. Now, clear of this woodland.
Now, don't do that, Mr. Farid. I want to stay. It's my job just as much as it is yours.
Corbett Farid! Corbett!
Ready, super!
Lighting the fuse now, Corbett! 3 minutes from my signal. Ready?
Ready?
1, 2, 3. Fuse lit, Corbett!
Get away from there, super! Come back here! Where the dynamite goes up, the whole lot's gonna go!
I'm safe here, Frank. I'm sheltering behind this carriage. Get down, Frank! 2 minutes to go!
Rig up. Brakes hard on. Seems to reverse. One notch on the regulator. Harry, more sand on the tracks beneath the driving wheels. Ready. 15 seconds to go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on, get blowing. There it is. Race off, up regulator. More sand, Harry.
He's not moving, Mr. Farid.
Yes. Down well is, but the wrong way. She's being dragged through the train. Forward gear for a few feet. Try and jerk stop to see if we can snap the coupling.
The old train sliding forward. There's a loco. It's crashing into the river.
We've done it. The coupling's gone. It's reverse again. Regulate up 2 notches. More sand, Harry. It's coming back, Harry. It's coming back. Dear old tea kettle. Keep pulling.
Corpus, old chap. You pulled off the miracle. We've lost the bridge and the electric locomotive, but we've saved the train.
And not only the train, Corbis, but at least 200 of those darn passengers who got back into the coaches. What do you think we ought to do about them, Super? Get the police to charge them for disobeying orders in an emergency? The whole lot of them could have lost their lives if the train had gone into the river.
Oh, man, leave them alone. Just let old Tea Kettle 46, that he take the train back in real style. It's a free ride for them today, Super.
It certainly will be. And it looks as if old Teacat was going to be on regular service until we get all these power lines fixed up again.
Oh, Superintendent, why don't you scrap the electrical lines and get real locomotives to do the job again? I can easily teach Frank to drive a steam engine again.
That's that. All right. No more.
High Adventure is produced by Anne Freed and directed by Henry Diffenthal.
Morgul as the friendly Drelb.
Yeah, those South Africans, they can tell a tale, can't they?
They sure can. And you're right. That was a tension filled episode, and I was kind of analyzing it as the way they went about it. The sound effects, the lack of music at the right points. Yep.
Right at the right point. I think that helped to build the tension.
Absolutely.
Where usually what we do is we pile on the music during tension parts, where here they didn't have, but they heard, they used the sound effects to do the job instead.
See, now we learned one thing. Perhaps.
Yes.
We could learn
perhaps
another.
Perhaps.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, today we learned one problem with the electric train. Another problem with the electric train is finding the extension cord long enough to get from one city to the next.
I'm sorry, it's like a bittersweet moment. It's funny, but no Gar. We're wishing you well.
I know. Yeah. We just didn't realize that until actually just before airtime that Gar would not be with us today.
Yeah.
I've been concerned because I hadn't heard from him all week. I talked to him. I forget what day, but it was very short. I think it was a Monday, maybe, for a few minutes. And he was feeling a little better then. He was going out to do his grass. Maybe he didn't recover from cutting the grass. I don't know. But
if he could only see all the crying emojis in the Eerie House Radio chat. and my buddy Chris is trying to get in for whatever reason. He said he can't get into the chat. So hopefully he's still listening live. We love you, man. We got more radio coming up too. More train wrecks.
We do. Right. Let's get to this. One of the most famous, according to historian James R. Reisendorf's book, The Man Who Wrecked the 146th Street was so successful. Okay, we did that part. The wreck near Waco was the brainchild of William George Crush, a passenger agent for the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad, better known as the Catty Railroad. The Catty, with a K, K-A-T-Y, had been struggling to regain its financial footing followed by the Panic of 1893, and appropriately named Crush was tasked with finding a way to attract new passengers to the railroad. Crush offered a deal where people would pay $2 to ride the Catty to the wreck from anywhere in Texas. Crush secured two old locomotives, numbers 999 and numbers 1001, and painted them red and green. Railroad employees then built a stretch of track between three hillsides that formed a natural amphitheater, perfect for viewing the wreck. Crush expected a crowd of 20,000 people to come to the event, so he built a temporary town and called it Crush. To support thousands of spectators, he drilled water wells, set up a borrowed circus tent to house a restaurant, built a wooden jail in case people got out of hand, even hired 200 constables to keep the peace. So on September 15th, people began to arrive and Crush aboard trains that would steam into town every few minutes. By 4 p.m., more than 40,000 people had arrived. This is 18... This after 1893, when was this? I'm looking for the date here. I didn't see the date. Anyway, we'll continue on here.
You explained. I'm like, did this guy just do it for the heck of doing it? That had to be incredibly expensive.
No. He was hired by the railroad to get people to ride the train. So by 4 p.m., more than 40,000 people had arrived, far more than Crush's original estimate, making Crush actually the second largest city in Texas, at least for a few hours. At approximately 5:10, Crush climbed on his horse, rode to a spot between the two locomotives, and at the wave of Crush's hat, the two trains began to barrel towards each other. The locomotives reached 50 miles per hour before they collided, crushing into a mass of bent steel and shattered wood before exploding. One witness described the terror. There was a swift instance of silence, and then, as if controlled by a single impulse, Both boilers exploded simultaneously, and in the air was filled with flying missiles of iron and steel varying in size from a postage stamp to half a driving wheel. A Civil War veteran who was there said it was more terrifying than the Battle of Gettysburg.
Oh, gosh.
Prior to the event, Crush had asked a number of caddy engineers about the dangers of crashing two locomotives. All of them but one said it was safe. The engineer who said the locomotives would explode was quickly dismissed as a negative naysayer. Crush was fired immediately after the crash, but after realizing that most people in attendance had a great time, rehired Crush the next day, and he worked for caddy until he retired.
That is amazing.
While Crush was perhaps the most well-known train wrecker, when the man that turned it into a career, Joe Connolly, staged more than 70 wrecks and destroyed at least 146 locomotives between 1896 and 1932. He even earned the nickname Head-On Joe. So we'll learn about Head-On Joe maybe between our next two tales.
The guy,
great,
I know
great
him,
stories.
He's the guy with the flat forehead.
These are great
yeah.
stories, I tell you.
There you go. Head-On Joe. First tale was from South Africa. Now we've got a story from Crisis called Grav Track 449.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds
and,
futuristical.
I don't know if it's futuristical, but it is about a train wreck. And it is episode number 78 of Crisis, and it comes to us even more modern from August 7th of 1975.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis. If this has been a tough day for you, what is about to follow will take you away from all that. Crisis has paid your fare aboard a train, a no ordinary train, oh no indeed. In fact, you won't find such a train anywhere on Earth. Not right now, at any rate, and not until well beyond the year 2000. Our train is almost silent. No clicking rails. For the grav track is levitated above a ribbon of invisible energy, generated in an endless concrete channel. Levitated so it slips through the air without sound or friction, defying gravity. Hence the railroad's new name, grav track. Your seat is on a westbound grav track just after nightfall, unit number 449, racing across the Great Plains toward a date with destiny. In 1 minute, Crisis brings you Grav Track 449.
How fast are we going now, Grandpa?
I don't know, honey. Maybe next time the attendant comes by, we can ask him.
Well, here he comes. Ask him now.
All right, honey. Hey, excuse me.
Oh, yes, sir.
My granddaughter and I'd like to know how fast this rig is traveling.
Well, our cruising speed is 780 kilometers per hour.
Oh, think of that.
But I doubt we're going that fast now.
Why not? Why can't we go fast?
Well, we're coming into an area where...
Huh? Where what?
Well, we're not supposed to discuss it with the passengers, but...
But what?
It's nothing. Certainly nothing to worry about. Can I get you something? A new cassette?
I've seen all your cassettes.
I tell you what, honey. Why don't you watch your most favorite one over again while I talk with this nice young fella? Will you do that?
Oh.
That's a good girl. Put it on your stereo phones, honey.
Oh, all right.
There. She's wearing those earphones now, can't hear a thing. Now, tell me, what's the story on this thing you were talking about, too, sir?
Well, as I said, sir, grav track people aren't supposed to talk about it. It's really nothing, just probably a flaw in the field generator for this sector.
Ah. See, I used to be in electronics long time ago. Your gravity field is weak through this stretch, huh?
I'm not a tech. I really don't know. All we've been told is GravTrack units running through the plains area have to lower their speed. That's all I know.
Now, in the old days, that'd be because of bad rails. Of course, GravTracks don't ever touch rails or anything else. That's fantastic. I never thought I'd live to see it.
Yes, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me.
We used to think our airplanes were fast. Why, I used to fly clear across the country at just about this speed. Well, we measured it in miles per hour then, of course.
Yes, sir, I...
I never did like flying. Loved trains. Say, did you ever... Oh, you're too young to know anything about diesels, but they used to have these big rumbling diesel locomotives fixed to a train sometimes, pulling a train of 100 cars.
I'm awfully sorry, sir. I'm being paged in another compartment. Have a pleasant trip, sir.
I'm bored with this stuff, Grandpa.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. We'll be home pretty soon, and you can see all your friends and your mom and dad and have a good time.
When will we be home?
Oh, another couple hours, maybe.
Grandpa, what place are we going through now?
Well, I don't know, honey. No windows in these trains anymore. Of course, there's nothing much to see, most of it being underground.
Can I walk around, Grandpa?
I guess so. You come back, though. You come back in about 10 minutes or so.
I will. Don't worry.
Well, maybe I can catch 40 winks. What's that? Hey, Shirley? Shirley? Oh, no. Something's wrong. Shirley, hang on!
Miss Parker, this is Beeman.
Go ahead, Beeman.
Something's wrong on 449.
Stand by. Well, now, where's your train?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You're supposed to be watching the board.
I know, but the blip just disappeared.
Oh, how long ago?
Just before I called you.
Stay on your sector.
Yes, ma'am. Miss Parker?
What?
449 was out in the plains. How could it just disappear?
It couldn't.
Yes, ma'am. But then where is it?
Help! Somebody! Help me!
Save your breath.
Who's there? Have you seen a little girl? My granddaughter's out there.
I'm as blind as you are.
Where are you?
Across the aisle from you. I'm under a seat.
Oh, you're the attendant.
That's right.
Well, what the deuce has happened? Do you know? What did we hit?
I don't know.
It wasn't more than 5 seconds after Shirley went back up the aisle that we crashed. You must have seen her.
I told you, I didn't see her.
Well, have you got emergency lights or something?
They're in the vestibule, at the end of the car.
Well, get them, man.
Sir, I'm very sorry, but I can't move.
Oh, you're bunged up, too. I didn't even think about that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Are you hurt?
The car seems to be laying on its side. I've got something across my legs.
Probably be a wall panel. You were sitting right by a bulkhead.
Funny, we don't hear anyone else. Let's listen. You hear anything?
No.
Neither do I. My Lord. You don't think the others are... Oh, no.
It could be.
Help! Help us!
Save your strength.
Listen, I've got a granddaughter somewhere on this train.
I know.
Well, what if she's hurt, lying alone somewhere?
No good thinking about it.
Well, what am I gonna think about then?
All right. I'm sorry. I'm with you.
You said the GravTrack people have had trouble along here before.
Yes, but they don't tell us about it.
You must know something.
Look, all I know is that other trains have reported something abnormal in the plain sector. That's where we are now, so the company sent out regulations to slow down through here. That's all I know.
Grandpa?
Shh, listen.
Grandpa?
Did you hear it?
Hear what?
It's Shirley. Here, honey. I'm right here. Grandpa's right here. Where are you?
My head hurts, Grandpa.
Well, where are you?
I don't know.
I hear her. She's behind a bulkhead.
Well, we've got to get her out. Shirley, are you all right?
I banged my head.
Oh, poor darling. Can you walk?
I don't know. I'm all scrunched down in the dark.
I don't know, honey. Grandpa doesn't know why it's dark, but the dark won't hurt you. You're a big girl. You know that.
I know.
She sounds like she's just on the other side of this compartment.
If she is, then she might be able to crawl through to us.
How come?
These walls are soundproof, unless they're damaged. I think there must be a hole in the bulkhead.
Hey.
No telling where it is, though. She might not be able to reach it. If we had a light.
I've got a light.
You have? Why were you asking me for a light?
Well, suppose it don't matter now. I've got a lighter.
Oh.
And it works, or it did anyway.
Aren't you a sly old fox?
Well, laws or no laws.
Grandma, who are you talking to?
The attendant, honey. You know, the nice man who told us all about how fast we were going.
You really have a lighter?
Yes. I'm trying to get to it. I suppose you're laughing at me.
I wasn't laughing. I know lots of people who smoke.
Well, by the time they made it illegal, I was already in the habit, so... There it is. Shirley, listen.
What?
Grandpa's going to make a light. Now you see if you can see it.
All right.
Do you see the light?
Uh-huh. I see it.
Then there is a hole in the bulkhead.
Yeah, I see it. Good night. Take a look at this car. Now, Shirley, can you crawl through that hole?
I think so.
All right, now, you try it. And be careful. You don't cut yourself. That broken metal's liable to be sharp there.
All right. I'll try. I'm scared.
Nothing to be scared of now, honey. We're all safe. Come on. Come on.
Oh, there's a man lying here.
Uh-oh.
Look, Shirley, never mind the man. Just come on through the hole.
But the man won't move.
Then the man won't mind if you crawl over him, honey. Come on, and then you'll be in here with Grandpa. Come on, Shirley.
And then can we go home? I want to be home now.
And I tell you, an 8-car grav track train doesn't just disappear.
But I checked all my circuits.
All right. They've had some kind of trouble in the planes for several days now. When 449 comes into the station out at the western sector, we'll order a report from the crew chief.
What if it doesn't come in?
Look, Beeman, I know you're new and all that, but you passed your controller's test. You know how the grav track operates. It is beyond human error.
I know.
Back when there were engineers and brakemen on railroads, you had accidents, same as when pilots actually controlled aircraft. Now the piloting is all done by computers. There was no human engineer on board 449 to make an error. There are no moving parts on a grav track train. Nothing can go wrong. Nothing.
But then, what did happen?
You asked me that before. And I still don't know.
Something of a mystery here on the train.
The grav track,
yep.
Is.
On the grav track, yes.
Yep.
For the so gravity, the gravity track.
Some folks are telling me they're having trouble logging into the chat. They're listening now, but anyway, hey.
Now, thanks, Blog Talk.
Yeah, thanks, Blog Talk, you dirty.
Thanks, Blog Talk.
Make people log in and out and try to get in. Well, they're trying to enjoy our show. Why I oughta.
And that ain't easy to begin with. I mean, oh, well.
Yeah, well, it's all good.
Oh, well. Interesting tale going on here. Interesting tale.
Indeed.
I did kind of mention it was kind of Twilight Zone-ish, as it is kind of Twilight Zone-ish. A train crash, and they can't find the train. They don't see it just went off the map, shall we say.
Oh, or off the rails.
Yeah. Like the show often does, yeah.
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 Gee, with you, me, and Gar, couldn't happen.
Yeah, and then we just wait for those magic words. We got a whole lot of radio to bring us back. Yep.
We do, indeed. So we might as well wrap up Grav Track 449 from Crisis.
The fallibility of mankind has been the final explanation for all kinds of failures as we've made our way up the ladder of technology. But when we reach a point where our machines are infallible and there's no need for a human hand to guide them, what's the explanation when one of these marvelous machines goes haywire? Pilot error? No pilot, hence no error. What's happened to GravTrack 449? If it wasn't carelessness or oversight or sickness or sabotage, then what? And not only what, but where? I promise you that before we're through, you'll have an answer to both those questions. But not just yet.
There! You're safe! You're safe, Shirley.
Oh, Grandpa, what happened? Were we in a wreck?
It looks that way, honey.
But the grab tracks can't have wrecks.
Well, now we know better, don't we?
Mister?
Huh?
I just discovered something.
Well, what?
Over here, where I'm lying. The floor is buckled and there's some space between the sidewall and the floor.
So?
Well, I was thinking if Shirley could squeeze down through there.
That's where the power is, isn't it?
Yes, but obviously, we haven't any power.
I don't care. There's enough electricity down there to... No! I won't have her exploring down there.
But the car's dead. Perfectly dead. What I'm saying is, if she took your lighter and had a look around to see what she could see...
I don't want to go down there, Grandpa.
You won't have to, honey.
It might be our only hope.
Hope of what?
Of rescue, of getting out of here. If nobody knows we're alive...
Never mind about that.
Listen, it's time to face it. You and I are trapped, right? There's only one person who can move around, and that's Shirley. Let her take your lighter and slip down to the ground.
But I'd be scared.
There.
Shirley, listen. Your grandpa and I are hurt, see? And we're trapped under these seats. Now, if you can shine your grandpa's lighter and someone sees it, they'll come and help us, and we'll all get home safely. You want to get home, don't you?
Yes.
Then that's what you have to do.
What do I have to do?
You take your grandpa's lighter and you slip down through this hole over here by me, see? And you can fit through there.
Oh, it's dark down there.
But you can make it light, see?
I'm scared.
Look, tell you what. You can just lie on the floor of the car and hold the lighter down through the hole and see what there is to see. All right? Will you do that?
Do I have to go down there?
Not unless you can see where you'll be.
Well...
Now, go get the lighter from your grandpa.
It's all right, honey. Here, take the lighter. That's a girl.
Now, bring it over here. That's right. Now, lie down and hold the lighter down into the hole. Hold the light through the hole. Now, what do you see, Shirley? What do you see?
What is it, honey? Tell Grandpa what you see.
Beeman, your shift is up. You can go now.
But... I want to stay until you find 449.
Beeman, I won't be finding 449 because 449 isn't lost. There's some kind of tracing malfunction in the locating circuit, that's all. Your 449 is obviously still proceeding west, only our board doesn't happen to show it. Now, these things can happen.
But there were over 400 people on that train.
And there still are over 400 people on the train. Go home, Beeman.
But it... Yes, ma'am.
Good night, Miss Parker.
Good night, Beeman.
Access to routing information. Go ahead.
Computer routing. This is Parker, Supervisor, Section P12A. Status of GravTrack 449.
GravTrack 449, now overdue 97 minutes at mile 390.
Computer, where is 449?
GravTrack 449, now overdue 98 minutes at mile 390.
What do you see down there, Shirley? Tell Grandpa what you see.
Something shiny.
Something shiny?
Can you jump to the ground, honey?
Wait a minute. I don't want her to be...
I can just touch the ground.
That's right. We're lying on our side.
There. I jumped down, see?
That's good, Shirley.
Are you all right, honey?
She can't hear you. Now, Shirley, see if you can tell me what the shiny thing is.
If that girl gets hurt out there...
Look, mister, I think your granddaughter's a lot more capable than you give her credit for. You'll excuse me for saying so.
Oh, it's fine for you to say that. She's nothing to you.
Oh, she's only our one and only hope of getting out of here, that's all.
What's she doing now? Can you hear her?
She's all right. She'll be back.
Surely someone's going to find us.
I'm sure they will, now that Shirley's out there with a light.
Why is it so dark?
We may be underground in a tunnel. It may be nighttime. I lose track.
Grandma!
There she is. All right, honey!
I walked all around out there. It's real dark.
What did you see? Did you see anyone?
No. Only I know one thing. All the other parts of the train are all beside us.
Beside us?
In a big, huge room, sort of.
Hang on, Shirley.
What on earth?
Hey, Mom. I put my model train away in the box like you said.
Good, Ralphie. Now it'll be all ready for you to set up again next summer.
And now, you have your answer as to what happened to Grav Track 449. It got put away for the winter. Where? In the toy box. Where else? I'll be right back with a word about next week. Grav Track 449 featured Merrill Mayle, Pat French, Kay Balzer, Shirley Aries, Bob Sorrell, and Todd Horan, and was written and directed by yours truly, Jim French, who cordially invites you to be with us again next week at this same time for Crisis.
For a nice crisis. Always good. A fine thing. Poof. There we go with our second show.
The true.
Nice twist ending.
Of course, it was. It was. Very Twilight Zone-ish, don't you say?
Indeed. And in fact. Say,
there could be something we could learn from like this.
That's what I hoped you'd say. Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Garrulous Moral of the Story.
With apologies to Gar, be careful if you toy around with trains, especially if there is a fifth dimension.
We can never apologize enough, Gar. Ah, the goat. Somebody grabbed our goat.
Yep. All right, we have one more story here. We're talking about Joe Connolly, who staged more than 70 wrecks and destroyed at least 146 locomotives. Between 1896 and 1932, he even earned the name of Head-On Joe as we left this. Now, Connolly grew up in Iowa along the tracks as a boy, often wondered what would happen if two trains ran into each other. I believe that somewhere in the makeup of every normal person Their lyrics a suppressed desire to smash things up, Connolly wrote in an article in 1933. So I was convinced that thousands of others would be as curious as I was to see what actually would take place when two speeding locomotives came together. Besides wanting to satisfy his boyhood wonder, Connolly worked in a theater and knew a good show when he saw it. For his first collision, Reisendorf writes, he teamed up with a veteran locomotive engineer, J.H. Bancroft, in order to safely carry out the event. Connolly went to the State Fair Board in Des Moines and offered to put on the crash for $5,000. Now, the initial price was a bit too steep for the board, but he came back with a more acceptable offer of $3,000, plus a cut of the ticket sales. The board agreed, and on September 9th, 1896, a week before the infamous crash at Crush, Connolly held his first staged wreck. About 5,000 people paid 50 cents each to sit in the grandstands and watch the show, and thousands more who stood along the outside fence. The wreck was a success, and both Connolly and the fair made a profit.
There you go.
Connolly began to crisscross the country, putting on wrecks from Boston to Los Angeles, Tampa to Salt Lake City, according to Reisendorf. He also found ways to add to the spectacle, including strapping dynamite to the front of the locomotives and filling freight cars behind the engines with gasoline and hot coal so the vehicles wouldn't be engulfed in flames after they derailed. Connolly and other train wreckers also like to paint names and phrases on the sides of the trains for different political candidates or causes so spectators could cheer for their respective locomotive. One wreck in 1932 featured Hoover versus Roosevelt. Connolly got so proficient at putting on train wrecks, he allegedly even tried copywriting it. Although Reisendorf was unable to find proof that he ever actually filed the paperwork to do so. By the 1930s, stage train wrecks were starting to lose their popularity because wrecking old trains, otherwise useful locomotives, was seen as wasteful at the height of the Great Depression. Connolly put on his final wreck at the Iowa State Fair in 1932. According to Reisendorf's book, after the destructive display, Connolly said, "Well, that's it," and walked away.
Aww.
The last staged train wreck for public viewing was in 1935, but that was not the last time people crashed two locomotives on purpose. In 1951, two steam locomotives were wrecked in Colorado in front of cameras for the movie Denver and Rio Grande, a Western-themed film about the construction of the railroad of the same name. Even today, train wrecks still offer grim appeal for the public. One only needs to look at the 2010 disaster movie Unstoppable to see an example of a modern audience waiting with a battered breath for a train wreck. But the trend of destroying trains in front of live audience is one that died out long ago, along with Connolly and Crush, the masters of the bizarre craft.
There you have it. Very, very, very interesting. But not surprising. I mean, like, people like to see crashing derby, you know, auto crashes. Well, why not amp that up a little bit and get some trains?
Well, and is that still an expression today? What, a train wreck? Things like that.
Yep.
So, you know, just like this show, what a train wreck.
A very apt description. So we're going to improve it by moving on to our next episode of Suspense. It's called Give Me Liberty.
Yes, and it stars William Powell, who not only played Philo Vance a couple of times in the movies, but also played Nick Charles of the Thin Man movies for five movies, as well as many other movies as well. But he stars in the Suspense. It was number 128, I believe, from October 21st. No, I'm sorry. It was episode number 312 from October 21st of 1948.
In just a moment, Suspense with William Powell.
Oh, Hap, here comes Harlow Wilcox.
Now, Betty forgets I already have two sets of Autolite resistor spark plugs and tries to high-pressure me into buying another one.
Well, hello there, friend.
Mr. Wilcox.
Hello. Hey, Hap, you look a little worried.
Car not running right, maybe?
Why?
Spark plug trouble?
None at all.
Listen, pal. What you need is a set of those sensational new ignition engineered Autolite resistor spark plugs.
But Harlow,
why, the get up and go a spark weary engine gets from Autolite resistor spark plugs will turn your gloom to glee.
Look, Harlow, I already have.
Why, when you replace your old narrow gap spark plugs with wide gap Autolite resistor spark plugs, by Cornelius, you can actually tell the difference in your car. Your engine idles smoother.
Harlow, good. Harlow, wait a minute. I'll listen to you and my engine later, but...
Yes, but right now, let's listen to suspense.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, William Powell in Anton Lieder's production of Give Me Liberty. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I embezzled $250,000. I want you to know that needed brains, planning, patience. I devoted 3 years of my life to the trick, and I got away with it. $250,000. Of course, they caught me very easily, but they couldn't find the money. So they handcuffed me, brought me back to stand trial. The judge was as big a fool as the others.
7 years is a long time, Mr. French. The insurance company will agree to a much lighter sentence if you will reveal where you've hidden that money.
But I only smiled. So my right wrist was handcuffed to the left wrist of a detective. And they put me aboard a train bound for the penitentiary. I could see that the detective had instructions to soften me up. He was much, much too kind.
You're comfortable, Mr. French? You want a magazine? Anything?
Well, I'd like to be able to lift my hand without raising yours into the air. Can't you guard me without being quite so attached to me?
Sure, I guess we can work that out. I'll tell you what. You sit next to the window. I'll kind of box you in. And that way you can wear the cuffs all by yourself and nobody loses.
Thank you.
Let me get my keys. There. On for me, on to you.
Wonder if I've made a good change. Feels clumsy.
Oh, you get the hang of it in no time at all. The biggest trouble is when you read a paper. 5 inches of chain don't give you much room to turn a page.
Well, then I'd better leave the newspaper for a less constricting occasion. I'll have 7 years for reading.
7 years. And a quarter of a million. Say, how smart does a guy have to be to get his hooks on so much lettuce?
Would you like some of it?
No, you kidding.
Well, let's make a deal. You drop the key to those things on the floor. Then go have yourself a nice lunch.
Sure. And when do I see Mr. French again?
When I meet you to pay off.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't be taking kind of a chance there, would I?
It was a stupid conversation, and I was only making words. I looked out at the fields and brooks and houses rushing past. I wouldn't see these things for 7 years, not counting time off for good behavior. But then I'd be free again. And I'd have my $250,000. Not a bad salary, huh? I'd use my brains for myself this time. Suddenly...
Everybody hold on! There's another train on the track!
Frankie. You all right?
Frankie!
I beat a car. Gotta get out of here.
A car lay on its side in flames. And those passengers who could move scrambled through the broken windows, paying no attention to a helpless man in handcuffs.
French. Give me a hand.
It was the detective. His legs pinned to the wreckage.
Move, will you? You want to see me roasted?
What can I do with my hands like this? What do you carry the key?
What do you want with a key? You can pull me out by an arm, can't you? You can grab me by the head.
You thick-headed fool, we'll both die here if I can't use my hands.
You can use them good enough.
Where's the key?
I can't find it. French, it ain't in my pocket. Look on the floor.
You're a liar.
French, my shoes are on fire. Please.
The only weapon was
help
a suitcase.
Yeah.
I kicked him in the face. I bashed my suitcase on his head.
Oh.
And he didn't have the key.
I emptied his pockets down to the last crumb of tobacco. But the fire crept closer. He hadn't the key to the handcuffs. And I wanted it. Because this wouldn't be an escape. This would be a disappearance. Oh, what a chance. What a chance. I'd have my liberty. And I'd have my money. I threw away his pistol. I wouldn't need a gun. I used my head. I squeezed my college ring on his finger. I switched wallets.
Is there anybody in that car? Please, this way. Over here.
There was a conductor out there. A crowd of passengers. I got to the opposite side of the car. No one. Not a soul. And there wasn't a splinter of glass left in the window. I slid down the side of the car, cleared the wheels, and struck the ground running. A few moments, a few hundred steps, and I was safe in the darkness. I was free. They'd think I was dead. And I had $250,000.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you William Powell in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hap, my friend, have you ever heard a conversation between two cars?
Two cars? Harlow Wilcox, are you crazy?
Crazy like a fox. Listen, a sorrowful-looking sedan came up to me on the street the other day and said, pardon me, pal, but have you got a potent pill for a sput-puttering engine that keeps popping along on poor firing spark plugs? Well, this car had sure come to the right man, old ALRSP Wilcox.
ALRSP?
ALRSP for Autolite resistor spark plugs, of course.
Oh.
Well, before I could answer this fumbling four-door, up glides a cute coupe with a mellow murmur and says, say, chum, if you want to hum and hustle on the highway, if you want to idle smooth as a satin slipper, if you want better luck with lean gas mixtures, actually save gas, why, switch your narrow-gap plugs for a set of those wonderful, sensational, wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs. What's more, continues this chatty convertible, Autolite resistor spark plugs cut down spark plug interference with radio and television reception. Really, the spark plug of the future. Why, I was talking to a delighted television set
Wait a minute, Harlow. Now you've got a car talking to a television set.
Aye, Cornelius Happ, television sets, cars, and everybody are talking about Autolite resistor spark plugs. And no wonder, because new Autolite resistor spark plugs have a 10,000-ohm resistor, ignition engineered right into the spark plug, and a wider spark gap setting that means smoother idling and gas dollars saved. Autolite resistor spark plugs fit any make and size of car, and don't forget, Autolite resistor spark plugs are backed by the reputation of Autolite and the over 400 automotive, marine, and aviation parts made by the Autolite people. Pipe that.
Okay, but right now, let's pipe Suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage William Powell as Earl French in Give Me Liberty, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
My first job after escaping was to break out of those manacles. I sat in a wheat field, holding my hands overhead so the blood would run from my hands and wrists and leave them slim. It didn't work. I tried that until my shoulders were in agony, and it didn't work. I couldn't snap the chain. I twisted it. I pulled at it. Tried to fling my hands apart, and it wouldn't break. I rubbed it against stones until my skin was torn and bleeding, and it wouldn't break. By this time it was morning, and I was pretty desperate. I found a match in my pocket. I went into the woods that bordered the field and built a fire. First the chain grew hot, and then my wrists. But I held them over the fire until I couldn't keep back the scream. And not until then would I believe that I needed help. I pushed through the wheat and the corn beyond it, and I stumbled down a slope into a barnyard.
Down, Jack, down!
A woman was standing near one of the hen houses, pan of chicken feet in her hand.
What do you want?
There was nothing to say. She had seen the handcuffs.
Come on. Speak up.
Look,
what do you want?
I'm innocent, I swear to you. I'm innocent.
Where are you from? How'd you get away?
Well, we were going up to the prison, and there was an accident.
Well, what do you want from me?
Could you lend me a file? And if you could spare some food, I'll be glad to
you
pay
for... You don't have to pay me for anything. Wait here. Jack, you're watching.
The fool went into the house. And the dog sat down on its belly and placed its nose between its paws. And its eyes never left my face for an instant. And then through the stillness, I heard the cranking of an old-fashioned wall telephone, and I knew what she was doing. I ran. I ran like a whirlwind. I couldn't get them off. I couldn't get the handcuffs off. I couldn't get anything to eat. I couldn't show myself. Do you know what it means to see food all about you and not be able to buy it? Don't tell me I could have eaten corn and fruit and roots. I can tell you the nature of every dog in that area and the feel of every barbed wire fence and the spang and roar of every rifle and shotgun.
That was you, Larry. That was you down in the front. Get around to the other side.
I crept into a village one night and forced up the window of a hardware store. I wanted a file, just a file. Do you know what they carry in hardware stores these days? Glassware, kitchen gadgets, garden tools, seeds, ovens, rat poisons, dressers. And then I moved behind a counter. A hardware store has to have a file somewhere. And my foot struck a wire, stretched across the floor. How tired have you been? Have you ever been so tired that your eyes felt like stones in your head? So weary that your jaw hung slack and your tongue seemed thick and heavy in your mouth? There were times when I thought I'd die. And on the evening of the fourth day of my liberty, I crawled quietly to the garbage cans back of a roadside diner and began to paw about for something I could eat. There was a step behind me. The world about. It was a boy. We looked at each other for a long moment. He was waiting for me to speak. I said, hello, Sonny.
Hello.
You live in this neighborhood?
Yeah.
I don't. I'm traveling.
With handcuffs on?
Oh, these? Yeah, a friend put them on me for a joke. Say, that gives me an idea, Sonny. Would you do me a big favor?
Depends upon how big.
Well, big to me, anyway. Sonny, it's worth $10 to be able to have these handcuffs off before my friend shows up. Look, can you get me a file or chop them off with an axe or something like that so I can have a laugh on him?
Nope.
Look, I'll let you keep them. They're fun.
Nope.
Oh. Well, then, would you do something else for me?
Depends.
I'm a little embarrassed about going into the lunch wagon like this. Look, would you step in there and buy a few hamburgers for me?
How much?
Same $10.
For a couple of hamburgers?
Why not? Then maybe you'd change your mind about the file.
Let's see the money.
I got it right here in my pocket, ready to jump into your hand. Hey, there are lots of things that a boy can buy with $10. Ah, there we are.
How do I know it's good?
Don't you trust me?
Drop it on the ground.
Drop it? Why?
You drop it and back away. Then I'll pick it up.
Oh, say, that's very smart. Yeah, how's that? Far enough?
I guess.
He picked it up and began to walk around the diner. But when he was out of reach, he broke into a run.
John Dale at the helm here as we are halfway through with our tale from suspense. Give me liberty. I love William. Oh,
he is so, you know, in his movies, like as my man Godfrey that he is just so proper, laid back and everything else, you know, that to see him in a role a little bit less proper, like right here, is really, for me, a fun thing.
Yeah. he's a criminal, but not, well, insists he's not. I thought we were going to have the fugitive there for a minute with the train wreck and escaping from the...
Well, in a sense it is, isn't it? Except he isn't looking for one-armed man. He's looking to get rid of his one... he's the one-armed man in a way.
It was being all, he's all tied up for the moment. In our story from Suspense.
And we got the great Paul Frees being the announcer in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, he was doing it, what, late 40s for them?
Late 40s, almost through the mid-50s, I think he kind of was there. Not quite through the mid-50s, but yeah.
Yep. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up.
Great radio voices.
Yo, man.
Yep.
He appears everywhere. Old cartoons. A lot of the, he was on Spike Jones. He was all over the place. War of the Worlds.
And think of all the commercials that he's been voice of. So, yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those really deep voices that you, absolutely recognizable, much like Thurl Ravenscroft, the guy who did Tony the Tiger.
Yes, yes. There's great.
Yep. He was also the voice of, well, not the voice, but he was the singer in the song Mr. Grinch.
Yeah,
so
I guess
is incorrectly credited to Boris Karloff, but who played the voice of the Grinch.
Yeah, it is.
But did not sing the theme.
But, right, he did the narration. And you know what's funny about that whole thing? In the original, when it originally came out, and Dr. Seuss previewed it, he was horrified when it looked at the end, and Theodore Geisel's, his name was not mentioned. The singer who did the Grinch song, his name was not mentioned in the credits at all.
That's a shame.
I think it had been fixed after that, but the original airing did not have his name in it, Thurl Ravenscroft. And he was just horrified that had been overlooked.
Yep. We've got... one more part of Suspense, and then who knows what we might have time for. But it's kind of a long segment, so let's just see. Here we go with the remainder of, and the exciting finish to, Give Me Liberty from Suspense.
I got away. And I couldn't tear them off. I couldn't. I had $250,000 buried away, and it was worthless to me. Do you know it can be bought with $250,000? Why, a man's soul can be bought for less than $250,000. And I couldn't buy a 10-cent file. I spent that night in a nest of cast-off railway ties attached to a siding. When I opened my eyes in the morning, I had company. There was a hobo sitting on the top of my fortress-like bedroom. A very unusual-looking hobo, in blue jeans and a navy coat. She was counting my money, smoothing each bill with loving care. She grinned when she saw I was awake.
Good morning, chum. You sleep like an honest man. What's the matter, chum? Never speak till they bring your orange juice?
Listen, I'm in trouble. I want you to help me.
To get the bracelets off?
Yeah.
Oh, chum, wouldn't that be kind of silly? I might lose all this hard-earned dough.
Look, there's more where that came from. A lot more. I'll make you rich.
Yeah, I heard that one before. So long, chum.
Listen to me. I got $250,000.
Yeah, I get feelings like that, too.
Come back, will you? It's true. Don't you read the papers? I'm Earl French.
I never heard of you, and where would you get that much dough?
Look, go into town and buy one of the newspapers of 6 days ago. That'll tell you.
Tell me what?
Don't people read anymore? Earl French, the embezzler. I stole $250,000.
Uh-huh, and you're wearing those things so you won't pick your own pocket.
Don't try to be clever. I died in the train wreck near Scottsville.
You're so sure about that, chum. You croaked only a few days ago.
No, you fool. They only think I did. Now, you get those newspapers.
You come back here with a file and some food.
No, don't order me around, chum. If you're a corpse, I won't take it from you. And if you're not a corpse, I'll poke you in the eye. Just play it easy, huh? Yeah, maybe I'll be back. Could happen.
I waited for her all through that long, blistering day, crouching within those four walls of railway ties. I lay there like a trapped animal. And yet I knew she'd be back. She couldn't resist it. Cheap little thing like that. I knew she'd be back.
Chum, it seems you were a very important guy in your time.
You saw the papers.
Yeah, and I got good news for you. Mr. French, you're now burnt to a crisp. That's the way they found you in the train.
Recognize me by the ring on my finger?
Yeah. Well, you're dead, all right. You and 250 grand.
Well, we'll come to that later. You get to work with the file.
No, you're giving orders again, and I told you I don't like it.
Give me that file.
It's right here in my jeans. And that's where it stays until you lead me to my share of that dough.
Oh, you'll get it. You'll get it.
Chum, listen to Mama. I can pick up 500 fish by turning in an escaped prisoner, or you can dig up that treasure chest and buy this file for half the plunder.
It's 400 miles away.
That's a fair distance.
But I can't ride a train or a bus with these on my wrists.
It's okay, chum. We'll walk.
400 miles?
Cinch. I've done it before.
We'll be seen.
Not at night.
How'll I eat? Where will he sleep?
You'll sleep in the woods, and I'll bring the grub to you. Me, I'll sleep in town, where I'll be snug and safe. You don't take this file from me, chum. Not till I see my half of that dough.
And that's how it was. That same evening, we started a walk. At first, it wasn't so bad. It gave me time to think, and I knew I'd think of something.
You know, there's kind of a sneaky look about you.
What?
You figure that in 400 miles, a lot of things can happen.
Oh, no. After all, I want to do what's fair. Let's split.
If we don't, I'll split your skull, and don't kid yourself that I won't, little chum. Been waiting a long time for a break like this.
Walked, with the handcuffs digging so deep into my flesh that I began to believe they were a part of me. Yeah, she brought me food, but she wouldn't come close enough to hand it to me. And every time I reached for anything, it was torture. My hands and wrists were a mass of misery. And as though her pet animal were on a leash, my friend always walked 6 paces behind me. She was too smart. And I realized that I had to get away from her, and soon. In the morning I decided to do it, she found me a shack to hole up in. I could hardly wait for her to leave and go back into town.
Yeah, this shack looks good. I'll meet you back here tonight.
All right. See you tonight.
That's the way I like you, chum. Nice and agreeable.
Well, why not? Why shouldn't I be? See you tonight, as usual.
Sure there isn't anything special you'd like me to bring you to eat?
No, nothing special.
Uh-huh. Say, chum, I think you better turn around.
Why?
Because...
Hey! No! When I awoke, with a dull ache filling my head, I found myself neatly trussed up. I could move a little, but not enough to get free. Talk about female intuition. She had guessed that I was going to try to get away from her, and she beat me to it. But I didn't give up, though. She'd have to make one mistake. Well, the next night, we'd stop for a rest.
Hey, French.
Yeah?
How can you be sure that dough is still there?
It's safe.
How do you know? What kind of a place do you hide it in?
You'll see.
Hey, don't you trust me?
Of course. As much as you trust me. And it's time we stop playing this little game. Now get out that file.
When I see the dough, little chum.
Take them off, will you? How long do you think I must...
Shut up. You'll wake up the neighbors. On, move.
No.
I said move.
No. That money's mine. And you'll never see it unless I want you to.
And we'll go to it the way I say.
Chum, you're making me mad.
You get out that file and take these off. Go on, get it out. I can give orders, too. What do you think you are, an animal trainer?
Now, that's not a bad idea.
Is it? But it happens when I'm not an animal. And it happens that... What's that for? You can't frighten me with a knife.
I wouldn't try.
You use that on me, and we both lose out.
Whenever my old man used to beat one of us kids, he always said the same thing. He said, never use a switch thicker in your thumb. Breaks the skin, but no bone. A kid can go on working.
A switch?
Yeah, like this one. Nice and green and limber. That's all the knife is for. I wouldn't use a knife on a buddy.
You won't use that either. Put it down.
You know, this is something I wanted to do ever since I found you sleeping in those railroad ties. You going to get up?
No.
This'll hurt.
I'll kill you someday. I swear I'll kill you.
I once had a husband like you. Brave enough outside, but once anybody put on the pressure...
You talk too much. Go on, I'm calling your bluff. I'm sick of hearing you talk.
All right.
We walked. God, how I hated her. And she? Well, she was sure she'd beat me down altogether because she didn't even bother now to taunt me anymore. She was very quiet after that. And a little careless. I stopped now and then, and she'd bump into me in the darkness. But she'd always stop dreaming before I could get my hands on her. Well, all things must end. Our pilgrimage ended one morning when I said... Here it is.
What?
The money.
Where?
We're standing over it.
You up to some sneaky trick again? We're standing in the middle of a highway. You didn't do any digging here, chum.
Look, there's a culvert running under the road here. A 24-inch pipe. Come into the ditch. I'll show you.
You didn't stick that dough into the pipe. It must have washed away.
It's not in the pipe. It's in a deep crevice between the pipe and the concrete. Pull out some of those stones.
You pull them out.
What, with these hands? Why, I can't touch anything without screaming. Pull them out.
French, so help me if this is a gag.
She believed me. She had to. She saw the truth in my eyes. The money was there, my quarter of a million. She bent over to tug at the stones. She turned her back to me for the first time. And that was it. That was the mistake I was waiting for. I sprang forward and I crushed her handcuff. Down on her head. The back of her neck. Her head. Ah, the pain. The pain of my wrist. I didn't care. My hands. Covered with blood. Her blood. Mine. She was dead. But I couldn't move. My hands. My poor hands. I had to wait until the shock drained out of them. Finally, I reached into her pockets for the file. It isn't there. That must be in this one. No. No file. She hasn't got a file. She never had one. Ah, the cheat. That dirty little cheat! Come on. Come on, little children. Come on. Come out, you baby. 250,000 beautiful little babies. Come on. Oh. I can't get a hold on it. I can't. With these handcuffs on, I need one arm free. Ah,
tie you, handcuff you. I'll break this chain if I have to. Rip my hands off. I'll get that money. I must have the money. I want the money.
Money. It's my money.
That's the way I found him, Chief. Sitting in the ditch beside a dead girl and babbling like an idiot.
Thank you, William Powell, for a splendid performance. Mr. Paul returns in just a moment.
Well, Hap, my friend, now
Harlow,
that you...
Harlow, I've been trying to tell you I already have two complete sets of Autolite resistor spark plugs.
Congratulations. Everyone should have a complete set of Autolite resistor spark plugs. Those modern miracles of Autolite ignition engineers, those monuments to tireless Autolite research. So, friends, why not drive down to your nearest Autolite dealer tomorrow, early tomorrow, and get your car a set of Autolite resistor spark plugs. They're sensational, and not because I said so either, but because they really are. Autolite means spark plugs.
Ignition-engineered resistor spark plugs.
Autolite means batteries.
Stay full batteries.
Autolite means ignition system.
The lifeline of your car. And now here again is William Powell.
My thanks to the fine cast of suspense actors who helped to make my appearance here so pleasant an experience. I'm a regular listener to radio's outstanding theater thrills, and I'll be tuned in next time to hear John Garfield in Death Sentence, another gripping study in...
suspense.
William Powell appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, producers of the Technicolor production The Three Musketeers, starring Lana Turner, Gene Kelly, June Allison, and Van Heflin. Tonight's suspense play was written by Herb Meadow, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. Anne Morrison played the part of the hobo. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Subscribe to your local community chest. Everybody benefits. Everybody gives. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We wrap up our third. Maybe the most dramatic, not necessarily the most intense,
yes.
But a very, very great yes. performance by William Powell. Dave, you're right. This isn't like what we're accustomed to from him. He's usually very lighthearted roles.
Almost like in general comedy type things, romantic comedy type things. One thing, of course, they left out a name. There's a fourth name that really needed to be added to the Three Musketeers that wasn't there. That, was, of course, was Vincent Price was in that as well. Never leave out Vincent Price.
No.
That's not the moral of this story. That's the moral of life. But I do have a moral for the story.
Do you now?
I do.
I better find the theme. Which I did. The Erie House Radio proudly presents another garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies, Degar. You really have to be careful when messing with a really smart woman. You might feel a little handcuffed.
You go, banana peel.
Slip sliding away, on that one.
So. That would be a good lyrics for a song.
It would be. Maybe I should, maybe I
life
should call
is like
someone
that. Sometimes the nearer you get to your destination, the more you really slip sliding away.
But you know what? It would be. But, you got to be careful with song references, Dale, because I was at McDonald's. My wife loves McDonald's coffee, and she usually has I usually order her a large coffee with 8 cream, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was waiting for her coffee because they don't know how to make just a coffee. They make you wait behind, and somebody yelled out order 687. And I yelled out, 5309. So they yelled, 687. I yelled out, 5309. And nobody left. And I felt really old, and I ate my burger in the playground area.
Yeah, with your head hung low. Oh, that's why I don't go where the young people go. That may say I smell bad, but I digress. That's
neither here nor there.
Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness. Maybe we got time for a quick
quick song there? No, I don't.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. Quick song. And I'll just shove in this coin.
And Francis Langford, who sings...
Somebody loves me, I wonder who. I wonder who he can be. Somebody loves me, I wish I knew. Who can he be? Worries me. For every boy who passes me, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me. I knew who can it be, where is me? For every boy who passed to me, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me, I wonder who, baby. Maybe it's you.
Nice little song there.
Yeah.
Oh, Dave, wait a minute. We got a caller. Hey, thanks for calling Erie House. What do you want?
Hello. I'm Mr. Red.
Oh, he hung up. Well, I wonder what he wanted.
I don't know what John Elway wanted. I don't know.
Yeah, that was John Elway. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Or that gal from Sex
but not
in the
very,
City.
But not very. Yeah.
Why the long face? Oh, that's what I say
I
to my collie.
That way.
I always say that to my collie. Why the long face?
Yeah. Hey, what's going on tomorrow night on Erie House Radio, Dale?
I don't know. It depends who shows up. If we're all healthy, it'll be you, me, and CW, I hope, and available.
Okay.
We're coming back with some CBS Radio Mystery Theater with a tale called Bury Me Again, because we got one more train wreck for you.
Yep. Good stuff here. Good stuff.
And we want to thank Fogs Bane and good old Bob for joining us in the chat. I know my buddy Chris is out there. He's been messaging me privately and commenting on these tales. And,
oh, good. Sorry more people couldn't get in, but hey, it is, you know.
Yep. And there's always people we can't see. Just like if I didn't know him personally, I wouldn't know he's listening. So who knows? There could be billions and billions. I know
just
one
like
thing.
Just like those McDonald's hamburgers, yeah.
The channel is just about to hit 63,000 listens.
Wow.
Hoping for a big 65 by the end of the year. It's possible. Especially with Halloween coming up. We always do good at that time of year. We'll see. I blew the ending. We got just a few seconds here to let you know that we'll be back tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern right here on Erie House Radio.
Mailed in.
And we're out. Thanks for listening. Good luck in prison. Kick, kick, kick.
Yeah, that last tick got it.
Yeah.
That last tick got
just
it.
Just barely. Yeah, I wonder how long I would have been going tick, 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 tick. I'm going to breathe at some point. Yeah, well, so no classic ending from Vincent Price. That's okay. He keeps forgetting CW's here, so we gave him the day
off. Yeah, yeah. There you go. Even Vince needs a day off every now and then.
Yep. Well, that was fun.
That was fun. Had some fun tales there.
That was one of the best parts of
Adams. Different types of tales.
Best parts of Adams.
Too.
Yep. Yeah. One of the best recurring gags on Adams Family was the wrecking trains.
Oh, yes, wrecking. It was. Yeah, it was good.
And I always wanted to do that as a kid, but I knew I couldn't afford to replace it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There goes one of those extremely loud tractors. It sounds like a giant robot with indigestion.
Does it now?
Yes, exactly what it sounds like. Or some sort of intestinal problem, let us just say. That's quite loud. Do they put motors on those things? I don't know. But, yeah, this time of year, the Lorain County Fair is quite... quite loud. And Lorain is so flat, you know, other than trees, you don't have much to block the sound.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? There's not much to natural contour of the earth around here. It's a lot of farmland.
Yeah.
Very few hills. Where parts of Akron is nice and hilly.
Parts of it are, we live in parts of it. We live in the Goodyear Heights area here. And there's some hills around here.
Yep. There's a few. I know when you drive in from either from the west or from the north, sometimes you're going over some pretty high bridges there. Because there's high ground and low ground.
We got a few of them, yeah. I don't like to look down. I get vertigo anymore. looking at a picture.
I'll tell you what, Denise... Denise was having a bad case of vertigo, and they couldn't figure it out, It's a couple things. I tell you what, she has some pretty good insight in putting, like, facts together in her head in her own way. She realized what was causing it. It was a depth perception issue. She sometimes has trouble going downstairs, too, because of this depth perception issue. She was born crossed eyes. And had corrective lenses.
Okay.
So this is probably something residual to that.
Yeah, I've had some trouble with that too, but I think mine's alcohol related.
Yeah. No, it's ironic because it was her eyes that attracted me in the first place. Once we locked eyes, it was like an electric shock.
Oh,
to know this girl. I've got to get to know this girl.
you got that Marty Feldman eyes thing, huh?
Yeah. No, you would never know that she was cross-eyed as a kid. There's some very, very old pictures of her as a toddler where they were still straightening out with the corrective lenses. But, yeah. Pretty cool. So there's some depth perception in there. Maybe there's something like to that with your case. I don't know.
No, I've become, the older I get, the more issue I have with height, period. And I can even look at, you know, that picture of these guys out in the girders having their lunch in, like, New York City. They're building these skyscrapers. That makes me nervous. I know it's just a picture, but golly gee whiz, stop that.
Now, do you find as you get older, your fear of heights increases?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, same here. When I was young, I'd climb up on a roof and dance around on the edge. You know, I'd shinny up any tree that I had the strength to climb. But now it's like fourth step of the ladder. I'm like, you know, if I fall, I could really get hurt.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? It's not. I'm gonna fall faster than I used to.
Yeah.
For some reason, I can't imagine what could be my increased girth. And it ain't going to be pretty when I stop falling.
Yeah.
Falling might be
same,
fun,
same
but the little
here,
sudden
yeah.
stop at the end, not so much fun.
Not so much fun, yeah. And I don't even do near as much. I used to do a lot more pratfalling, even for the show, than what I do now. And to me, the falling isn't so hard because I know how to fall. The hard part is getting back up.
Yeah.
I've got a sketch I want to do. It's a video of an audio thing I did in about 1982. Mm-hmm. I want to do it as a video sketch. I know how to do it, but the problem is if I actually did this, I'd probably wouldn't be able to walk for a day.
So I
am going to brave it sometime.
So you're weighing how funny is this going to be? Is this worth a day
of
immobility?
Yeah. You know, because falling down is a hard thing. Getting up and looking like it's not an issue, you know, to get on my knees is a tough thing. Then I'm on my knees for a short time, and then I stand up and walk off like with my cell phone. Being on the knees is terrible for me, and then getting up from a knee without making it look like I'm struggling. But it's going to take everything. Things happen when that camera comes on, though, Dale.
Yeah.
There's always that
rush. Yep.
There's an adrenaline that goes on.
Yes.
Because then after I get that part, then I'm going to go to a fire station. Yeah.
And if you do when you do enough shows, don't you always have a certain awareness about you, Dave?
Yeah.
No, seriously, of where to look and how. You have a general idea how it's going to look on the other side of the lens.
Yes, I do. And you know what's funny? It took me almost a year of filming. I've been on radio, non-commercial radio, for years, doing comedy and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, it took me a year of doing video before one day it just clicked and I just felt comfortable finally, you know? I know you did the disc jockey and things like that. How much... It probably didn't affect you that way, but it did me.
No, it did, Dave. Honestly, it did because it even though I did the nightclubs and I did a lot of visual gags with people, there's mm-hmm. still something different about putting a production together. So when I first started doing the show at cable, I wasn't even doing the camera work or any of the editing. I just kind of constructed the show, wrote it, quote unquote, in the loose manner in which I did.
Yeah,
the actual performing of it, that wasn't hard. Very often, stuff was done in one take, maybe two takes. And or we'd make two copies of something that, all right, this was good on this one, and this was great on this one. Let's look at it and decide which one to keep, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Or just the director would do that because he also edited at times. And, it took a while to get presence. I had a general idea because of doing, like you said, doing all that nightclub stuff, but it's still a different medium. It's different.
Being verbal, even when you're in front of people, is different than being in front of a camera.
Yeah, because what you say is kind of more important than what you're... Yeah, you want to gesture right, you know, appropriately and have the right posture for what you're doing, but at the same time, the camera forgives nothing, where a dark nightclub forgives a whole lot.
Yeah, that's true. And I tell you what, one of the stupidest things I see, and now all sports shows and stuff are doing it. They used to have the guys, you know, sitting behind desks, and they looked comfortable. Now they have them standing out there, either standing behind the desk or standing out by the, and they have no idea what the heck to do. They're just standing there, waiting for their turn to talk and stuff. And unless they've got something in their hands, like a football or something, you know, it just, they're uncomfortable, and I feel uncomfortable. Put them back behind the desk. Who says you have to stand up and be out?
Yeah.
They're not actors. They're commentators.
Yeah.
I've always felt that was ridiculous.
It is.
Always felt that was ridiculous.
I don't need to see all of you. Say what you got to say and get out of here. Sit at the desk.
That's right. Get on to the show. Yes. Nah. But, yeah, it took me a good year before I started getting comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, we have to use the whole, when we do a visual thing, and you've done a hell of a lot more than me, you got to think about the whole frame and the whole experience, including the sound and what kind of music and or sound effects you're going to use.
Yeah.
It's a lot to orchestrate.
Well, and then I have to hand it over to others behind the camera to be my eyes.
Yes.
Once I step out there and the cameras start rolling, I can't do what they're doing. I can do it before they're doing it, as we all have. I really enjoyed when we went and did the two Superman events where, you know, I love those shows, but, you know, when we went and covered those two Superman events,
mm-hmm.
and you and Rick and I, we all filmed it as a producer.
Yeah.
Where, so, you know, I didn't tell or want to tell you what to do or what to get, because I knew you would use your sense as a producer and get what you wanted. And, you know, but I've had, you know, Rick is really good with it. Debbie is pretty good at telling me when something isn't right. She'll stop it and tell me, you know, you're out of frame or this or that, stop moving or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have one camera person, Lynn, who just, she won't tell me when something's wrong. And and I had, like I said, I finally, you know, I've told her that before, but I really last time, and it's not that it didn't work, because it did, because I made it work with my we'll fix it in post. You know how that sort of goes. But
yeah.
I told her, Lynn, when you're there, you are my eyes. You have to tell me when something isn't working. If somebody that didn't step that way in a practice of it and then stepped a different way and covered somebody up, you got to tell me that, because she sees it and she notices it, but she won't tell us, you know?
Yeah. You know? I've done more shooting of cameras in front of it instead of behind it. And I would gather that it takes a lot of shooting practice to become fully aware so that you are paying attention to what's, you know what I mean? You're part of the direction team at that point.
Yeah.
When you're behind the camera.
And that's what I... But she notices it, because I know I said, you know, Lynn, we had a problem with one of the shoes. She said, yeah, Mike covered up Shannon. I said, you needed to tell me that. So she didn't even have to see it. I even got to show it to her. She already knew it. But she didn't tell me. And so I love her to death. She's great help, and I won't stop using her. But, you know, I'm just trying to get her to be a little more assertive on the
shoot. Yeah, you either got to start and stop over or get somebody to move the hell over with some direction. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it was, but you know, it always makes, I mean, hey, I have such great help, both behind the camera and in front of the camera.
You get great people, man. It just amazes me, because all your productions, it flows, it's cohesive. I've seen a lot of people's shows, and even the Ghouls' early work on Channel 61, it's kind of disjointed to follow, and you were following more the personality than the production, whereas he went on, it was, you know, a beautiful melding of both.
Right, right.
Where your stuff always flows, it has a logical beginning, you know, everything segues together nicely.
Well, and a lot of it is because I truly believe in the script. I know there's some at least humorous if you have it in the script. If you're trying to just go off the handle
off the cuff,
and do everything faking it, you know, then you're going to get some laughs, but there's going to be some spots you're going to say, wow, okay. No, yours, you know what you want, and you're able to get it, okay?
Yeah, but I ad-lib a hell of a lot. Even when I'm doing a pre-recorded show, I think I would, if I had to stick to a perfect script verbatim, I think I would sound very wooden or robotic or something.
I will also add that no script has ever gone exactly the way I've written it. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, but part of it's because people putting themselves into that. And as long as they say something that isn't there, as long as it isn't going to take away from the punchline or a line, two lines later, I don't care. But
yeah, it's got to be cohesive. If you have if you're looking at a script, you're supposed to understand where things are flowing and where they're going. And I,
I've
that's
done,
what the few guests I've had, that's the only direction I've given them is, look, say, you get the gist, right? Okay, good. But put it in your own words so it's comfortable and it comes out right, you know, in the first, second, or third take. And they almost always work.
Yeah. And this is interesting because I will shoot Monday up in Old Brooklyn, and we'll have Robin. It'll be her first time co-hosting. Now, she is in this with Spaceship One, and she's kind of leery. I mean, this woman is a professional, and she's bowing down to our level. But she's good. She's good to work with. She's easy to work with, and she's a fun person. She truly is. Hopefully we won't get locked in too many stories because, man, does she have great stories to tell. And just easy to get locked into them. So we'll hopefully we'll become part of some of her stories down the road here. But she's just an amazing person. I'm very, very happy to have her in this as part of the cast this time. But, yeah, I mean, I'd pick up some great people through a couple different ways. And Klaus, who's the commander – I picked him up because I've seen his photography. He said he's got a great eye. Come on and help me be a cameraman. Well, I knew it was going to be short a person there. So, hey, can you step in and do this thing for this last segment? He says, sure, I think so. He did a great job. And so every now and then I include him. But then, like, one show I even really used him as a third wheel feature. He was great. And another one I used him in a couple of segments. He was great. So, but he's also great behind the camera. I trust his eye. I trust his eye, you know?
That's gold, because if you can trust his eye, then you can fly in front of the camera.
And I will admit there are two shows that Mike and I did that were completely scriptless. And they came out okay. Believe me, I was not as comfortable as Mike was with it. But it came out okay. Basically, during both of those, I kind of followed his lead. We talked about a bunch of things before the shoot. We kind of rambled back and forth a little bit during, you know, before in the rehearsal, and then we just do it. No script. And it came out okay. Actually, one of them pissed me off because it probably came out as good as any of my scripted ones. But anyway, I know when I write something...
I remember when we started this, especially when we were doing all talk. You told me you weren't that comfortable. You weren't that comfortable with it at first.
Well, right, and look how long I've done radio, you know, I've done the sports and I've done the comics, and I've done the. I was at that point. I was several years into making our show.
But reading copy is very much like reading a script.
But then it was again. It was freeform. And story I always tell, the first time I called up and it was to Creepy Castle and you did that 911 sound bite and I hung up.
Because you thought that was what was happening.
I said, oh no, I called the wrong thing.
Oh God, I forgot about that. That's so funny. Oh, we should have shared this with the live audience.
Oh, we have in the past, but we'll do it again.
Yeah.
It's a story that comes up from time to time.
That's such a great memory, geez, because that's like, that's 7-8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was.
And I'm still alive.
Yeah, we are.
Hiya, Joey.
Getting older, but we're still alive.
Joey's demanding love and attention. Pretty soon the...
Yeah.
Puppy will be too, little devil.
Yep. So with that, I suppose it's time to turn off the house lights, turn on the three spot. You know what that's about, don't you? During when Jimmy Durante was on television, he put on three spotlights and was in the one closest to the stage and walked out through the spotlights and into the darkness. So with that being said, turn off the house lights, Dale. Turn on the three spotlights. And bring on the one and only James Durante.
Wait a minute. The lights are out. I can't see where the buttons are. Here, I'll feel for it.
You put the spotlights on first.
Oh.
It's time to say goodnight.
I had no idea.
Good night. Blind leading the blind here.
One more and say but good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I think for some breakfast tomorrow, I'm going to have some marmalade.
There you go.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by...